You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Welcome to the Big Suey, a podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
The reality is the Nets aren't lazy. It's not like they have a lazy system there. It's just Miami has a hard system, a hard culture, a hard practice environment. They don't take days off. They are more demanding, I would say, than your average NBA team. I would say Brooklyn is quite the norm, especially when you talk about vet teams. I think that's an important thing. Young teams tend to practice more because they need it, because they need to go through the literally be walked through all of this stuff over and over again. Older teams, vet teams, we can talk about it. So it's not that we don't meet at all, but it's a lot of we're going to get some shots up, we're going to watch some film, we're going to make it quick, everybody go home, because we can talk about it and you guys can conceptualize it without having to physically go through it. But on top of that, Miami's also crazy. And I think, you know, it's a combination of things. Stugatz, I know you were doing a Stugatz, but you're right. Part of it is, Lamarcus Aldridge says, these guys have the second best record in the conference.
Yes.
And their best player's hurt.
Yep.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, when he comes back, this thing is going to be, it's a wrap. I'm going to go over here. I'm going to hit some jump shots, you know, grab some rebounds, and I'm going to win a championship. Go down to Miami. Not only do we have to work, like work in general, because that's the culture, but we're going to have to work just to win. Miami's not a talent team. They have talent, but it's not a team that overwhelms the talent. It's a team that needs to execute, that needs to do things the right way every single time. That's what happened. That's how they got to the finals last year, was out-executing their opponents.
Think about this, Mike, though, because it's funny, and Amin's making a great point. You're a free agent. You're at the end of your career. You're trying to tack on a title. You don't want to work that hard. Miami's an 8 seed. Brooklyn's a 2 seed. Durant's been hurt. Kyrie Irving plays every other night. You're saying to yourself, if I'm going to go to one of these two teams, that's the team I'm going to go to. I don't need to work nearly as hard, and they have a much better shot of winning a championship. Even if Durant doesn't come back, by the way, they have a better shot of winning a championship.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me one bit that Brooklyn was a better fit for LaMarcus Aldridge. I never saw it for Miami. I know Pat Riley's always liked him, dating back to that dinner that they took where Miami had no cap space and he entertained the thought of coming to Miami. I just never want, and I know this sounds like, well, he broke up with you. You're going to do the thing now where you don't want him. I was genuinely perplexed as to how he fit into Eric Spoelstra's plans outside of once being talented. And I would always hang my hat on Heat culture. They'll get the most out of him. And then it's awfully convenient for me to say, well, he goes there. He wasn't cut for it. But I think it's true. I don't know where he fits. But the Miami Heat have, under Pat Riley, made an impact when it comes to the buyout market, both with LeBron James and without him. They got Joe Johnson as a famous example. Is there a buyout candidate for the Miami Heat? This seems like to be a crazy Twitter fan theory thing here, especially after they didn't pull the trigger on trading him. There's no shot Kyle Lowry is a buyout candidate unless the wheels fall off over there for Tampa.
No, because the reality is he has value to them as a sign and trade guy at the end of the year. Even if he's not coming back next year to the Tampa Bay Raptors, which, by the way, don't write that off, because they've got some flexibility. They might be doing some things to revamp and reload. But if he says, look, guys, thanks for the memories, but I want to go somewhere else, then the Raptors are going to hold on to him as a sign and trade piece because they can get some value out of that.
We didn't cover that. The Miami Heat's reluctance to still part with Tyler Hero. That seemed to be the line in the sand. I don't really get what Masai was doing in not making the move. I know that he wanted prospects from the Lakers and the Heat, and they just wouldn't cross that threshold. So he ends up holding on to Kyle Lowry, who is 36 years old. Well, he's going to be 36 years old, right?
No, he just turned 35.
He just turned 35. Okay, well, the next playoff run, conveniently, next playoff run he'll have in his career, he'll be 36 years old. Probably looking for something different at this stage in his career. I found it odd that they hung on to him.
Yeah, I mean, because there's a couple of things, and I think we talked about it on Stupidity, but I'm not sure. There is a belief that I will lose this battle to win the war, right? So for Masai and for Bobby Webster, who's the GM of the Raptors, it was more important for them to say, hey, this is our line in the sand and we won't cross it, and for that to be believed. It's like playing a game of chicken and then, all right, we're going to just crash into each other, because the next time you play chicken, everyone's going to say, well, look, these are the same crazy MFers that didn't trade a guy who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And so the next time they do that, they say, look, if you want to get this deal done, you have to include this. The people on the other side of that table are going to know, look, they're serious. They really mean it. Remember what happened with Kyle Lowry. And so I understand, especially because these weren't overwhelming deals. It's not like, oh, you were getting 3 first-round picks for Kyle Lowry or whatever. And, you know, the things that were being offered to them were okay pieces. You talk about Schroeder and KCP or whatever it was for the Lakers, but that's not enough for me to say, oh, I can't believe we missed out on that, particularly because we know their season isn't going anywhere. No, if you're going to trade your franchise best player ever, it's got to be for something that you can build to the future, either a first-round pick or a body, a young body. And neither of those deals really included that, so I'm not surprised that they stuck to their guns.
I mean, which team over the weekend, which team improved the most?
It's a tough one. I mean, Denver definitely took a leap because they had an issue. See, they addressed an issue. They addressed their lack of defense, and they addressed, you know, kind of another score, particularly above the rim score, and getting Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon is a guy who's going to help them defensively. He's going to finish above the rim, which they didn't really have a whole lot of. And he can shoot a little, and he can pass a little. He could do a little bit of everything.
Can he guard LeBron? Denver, I mean, no one could guard LeBron, but he gives them a good option in guarding LeBron, right?
He gives them an option they didn't have. Like, it went from, we don't have anybody who can come close, to, all right, well, maybe this guy can try a little. And so that's the first step in the right direction. The Clippers getting Rondo, it depends on what Rondo we get, because everyone keeps saying playoff Rondo, but the reality is playoff Rondo wasn't an every game phenomenon. It was like 3 or 4 games. But the Clippers are in a situation where they need a point guard every game, not just for 3 or 4 playoff games. So it depends on how much Rondo has left in the tank. But if he's at least passable as a point guard, that's an improvement for them. And then,
I want you to say the Blazers with my beloved Norman Powell.
Oh,
yes.
I like Norman Powell for them as an offensive player. I just thought, like, you gave up Gary Trent, who was their best perimeter defender. And when you talk about the playoff, look, the Blazers are a terrible defensive team. The Blazers are right now, I believe they have the second worst defense in NBA history. The worst defense in NBA history is the Sacramento Kings this year. They're a train wreck. But we don't talk about the Blazers being equally historically bad because Sacramento exists. I'm not saying that Gary Trent was going to help them be average or even, you know, good. But in every playoff series, you're going to have a couple possessions where you need someone to get you a stop. Gary Trent was that kind of guy. Like, look, we allowed 125 points, but it would have been 130 if it weren't for these 2 big stops by Gary Trent at the end of the game. They got rid of that from Norman Powell, who's a great offensive player. He's an offensive upgrade, but I'm not sure that that's what they needed, kind of like with Brooklyn. I don't know if more offense is what you needed if you're the Portland Trailblazers.
What's annoying about the NBA is we'll talk about every team and never talk about the Jazz or the Phoenix Suns. They're the 2 best teams in the sport. I know what I haven't heard anyone say either of those teams are going to come out of the West, and so I'll be the first to say it. One of those 2 teams, not Phoenix, Utah, is coming out of the West. They're the 2 best teams in the sport, and I mean, no one and I mean nobody, okay, including yourself, by the way, thinks either of those teams are coming out of the West. Am I right?
I like how I became the target right there at the end of that.
Well, I haven't heard you say it. I haven't heard anyone talk about these
teams. You said it, I mean.
Yes, it's your fault.
No, you know, the funny thing, Stugatz, is you know what those two teams have in common?
What?
They've been healthy.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the story of this season.
Yes.
The team that's been healthy. And by the way, that's the story of every season. Usually the champion is the team that's been healthy for most of the time, or for at least in the playoffs, right? The Jazz and the Suns have been healthy all year long. I know Mike Conley's been in and out, but for the most part, like, it hasn't disrupted them. The problem that they're going to face is when everybody gets healthy, when the Clippers are healthy, when the Lakers are healthy, are you still going to be the best? Probably not, right? And in the playoffs, that's the only time it's ever going to matter. For the Suns, I think another issue they're going to have to face is being a young team. You got Chris Paul, you got Jay Crowder, and I believe the next tenured guy is Dario Saric. And then after that, it's a bunch of people who've never been to the playoffs. Devin Booker, never been to the playoffs. Mikal Bridges, Ayton, Javon Carter. Like, all these guys that play for them. Cameron Payne, he's been to the playoffs, but I don't think he's played much. They're guys who, this is going to be their first time at the rodeo. And so it reminds me a lot of the Mavericks last year, where they've got Luka and they've got the best offense in NBA history and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, none of that matters, because if it's your first time at the rodeo, you're going to have a couple of f-ups here and there.
It's odd to have, well, you're 45 games into the season and the Jazz have 11 losses and no one. I mean, nobody is picking them. And that's odd, because any team who does this through 45 games is usually the favorite headed into the NBA playoffs. I mean, it's just weird, man, what we're doing.
Well, the other thing, Stugatz, is also we've seen them be good and go to the playoffs and lose because they're not flexible, right? Like, Rudy Gobert is a great defensive player, but the last three playoff trips, we've seen teams basically game plan him out. They go, yeah, what if we make you guard out here? And then it's like, game over. If he's not in the paint under the rim, then, you know, we're having a good time. And if he is under the paint under the rim, then we've got shooters that are going to punish him for that. And the last 3 years, they've lost to teams that have basically game planned him out. So they've kind of like got a little Milwaukee Bucks thing going on, where we're saying, well, to quote Stugatz, do it in the playoffs. Like, none of this matters if we know you can be game planned out.
Cortez, what's your theory on the Jazz, by the way?
Well, the Jazz got smacked by the Heat last month. They have not been the same since. They lost like four out of their next six. To Amin's point, once you start playing like a real team, a playoff team, a tough team that'll punch you in the mouth, you learn a lot. The Jazz played that team, the Miami Heat. We've learned the Jazz are not built for this.
The Jazz have won five straight.
Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous. And if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me, I just bought three for my wife, daughter, and myself for game one. I live it. Because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there, and I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing, the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed.
If you put your bananas in a fridge, they last longer. Pro tip.
Really? Where else would you put them? Just out of curiosity.
I usually have them out on the counter, but then they would turn mushy and dark and all. And then I started putting them in the fridge like a couple of days after they get ripe. They last, like, even if the skin starts turning black, the inside is still like firm and crisp.
Bread too.
Bread stays in the fridge.
I'm surprised to see you eating like a real breakfast food. Aren't you like of the belief you eat non-breakfast foods at breakfast, like flan?
First of all, flan is a breakfast food. I don't know what you're doing there.
It's not.
It is. It absolutely is. What's in a breakfast? You usually get eggs, right? Little milk.
Yeah.
Sometimes a little sugar, to get your day going. That sounds like flan to me. So I don't know what you guys are doing there. But I don't have flan available to me, at least not good flan. I want a good flan to start my day. If I don't have a good flan, then it's not worth it. So I usually knock out a little egg and cheese and turkey sausage sandwich, a banana. I got these clementines, right? Easy to peel. Mm-hmm. Pop them 1, 2, 3.
I love a good clementine, man. Those things are great.
Love a good clementine. Yeah. You know what you love, Stugatz, when you get it all in one peel? You ever do that? You ever challenge yourself to peel it all at once?
No.
Without breaking, so you have just one piece of peel at the end.
That is amazing. The most I've been able to peel at one time is a half. That's the most. Mm. Yeah, that's my record. You peel the whole thing at once?
He can't do it. He's trying. He can't do it.
What's your strategy mean? Do you just drill the thumb in to that center part and start
peeling? This is cheating what he's doing right now. He made it seem like he breaks it at one spot and just peels it and it all comes off. What he's doing is he's made a hole at the top. And instead of peeling it at the bottom, he's just making a bunch of separate peels and they're all going to be connected at the end. But it's not one peel.
But to his point, Billy, if it remains one peel, then he was successful. Like, as long as there's not a lot of different
scraps.
It's
not one peel. No. When you make various tears, that's not one peel.
But Billy, I think what Chris is trying to say is if you peel it all, it doesn't matter how you get to peeling it all off in one try. If you do it, you do it. You know,
it's not one try. It's not one try. One try is you break it once and you just go around and you peel it off. If you break it once and then your hand lets go, it's like the contest where you have to keep your hand on a car. If you take your hand off the peel, nope. If you take your hand off the peel and you go in for another tear, that's not one peel, multiple peels.
So to use your analogy, when you got to keep your hand on the car, that's like saying if I have my hand on the car, then I put my other hand, then I take this hand off, then I'm disqualified somehow. I've stayed in contact the whole time. I'm still touching the car, Billy.
No. Because your other hand is touching the orange?
Yes. Like, because it's one tear and then another tear. But like the point is, at the end, I have a completely whole peel here that I could make a little fake tangerine out of. Right? Hey, you want tangerine?
A little fake. Ah,
yeah. Nice. Lake.
I have trouble. I don't know about you guys, but if the banana peel is slightly off color, I have trouble ripping that thing open and eating the banana inside. Because I feel like if the peel is kind of rotted a little bit, I feel like the banana probably is too. Is that no?
That's why you put it in the fridge.
Really?
Because the peel will look like, oh my God, these bananas are bad. Then you open it up like, what? Perfectly like protected this whole time.
I know someone who used to collect bruised bananas to give to a spouse's coworker. Because they said that those
I was just about to say that.
Compost.
I'm the person.
Yeah, Chris is the person, but I didn't know if Chris was embarrassed or not, so I didn't want to put his business out there.
Dude, that's the first 5 seconds that I was like, wow, that back thing happened to my wife. I was like, oh wait, Billy's talking about me.
He was protecting you and you didn't seem to want the protection.
all your bruised bananas, bring them to me. My wife's coworker will take them.
So what, for a compost situation?
I don't know. I think maybe banana bread or maybe smoothies. There's some use you can get for them. Like once they're
We don't know. We don't know exactly what he's doing with these bruised bananas.
I think it's to her. I could text my wife. See what she did.
I don't like this situation. This is a dangerous game.
Ooh.
Yes, it is. The most dangerous of games. This all seems weird too. Now you have to text your wife what she's doing with the bananas. I mean,
but what's the most dangerous thing that could be done with an old banana that's bruised? Is the game that dangerous?
It's really not.
Also,
I don't know if you want to play this.
Has anyone ever slipped on a banana peel in real life?
That's a great question.
Put it on the poll. Has anyone ever slipped on a banana peel in real life? Please put that on the poll. Great question. I haven't.
Is there anything in movies that's more bullshit than that?
But here's the thing. Mm. They stopped doing it. In the 80s, every cartoon, like, hey, I've got to trap this guy. Here's what I'll do. I'll eat a banana. I'll throw the peel. And then the next guy comes and he slipped all over it, right? It was everywhere in movies and TV shows and cartoons. And then all of a sudden, it disappeared. When was the last time you saw the banana peel gambit used in a movie, TV show, or cartoon?
Mario Kart video game.
Yes.
Where Roy. Someone slipped on a banana?
Yeah, but it isn't even really a slip. That's more of a spin.
Yeah, it was a spin.
That has never happened, really. Billy Madison. No one has ever stepped on a banana peel and just started spinning out of control.
What's the most famous scene involving a banana in movie history? It's Banana in the Tailpipe, right?
Billy Madison.
Oh, wow. Billy Madison is great.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Banana in the Tailpipe.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's no number. There's no other rival for it. That's it.
Can I tell you guys a secret? I just backed up Chris Cody's Billy Madison, having no idea what he was talking about.
Oh, Doyle Rules.
Ah, now classic. It's coming back to me. Thank you.
No, it's not coming back.
What happened? Yeah, what happened, Stu Gatz? Because I'm a little fuzzy here. Just refresh my memory.
I believe they threw a banana peel out of some sort of window, a car window. It was a car window, right? It was a car window. And that's all I know. I don't know what happened after that, but there was a banana peel. It was thrown out of their station wagon on a family trip, and something from there happened. I don't know what, though.
They went off a cliff.
Oh. The O'Doyles?
Station wagons, too, huh? Where'd they go?
A good old station wagon?
Yeah.
Yeah. I miss those.
I got to see if they still make those.
Made way for they the do. Minivan.
They do. I think Audi makes one, and I think Mercedes makes one.
So, like, the high-end cars are making...
Mercedes?
The high-end brands are making station wagons?
I don't know why. I mean, it's just this one model that they put out there. I think some people are nostalgic for a simpler time when wood paneling was on the outside of your car.
There is no Mercedes in history that has wood paneling on the side of a car.
I guarantee you there is, Billy. Look it up.
I'm sure there is. You just say one of those things like it's never happened before and then hope that no one catches on and keep moving.
You ever think about things like that? Like there's got to be one of at least of everything. I think about this when I think about fetishes. Like there's got to be someone who watches porn for like orange peeling. There has to be, right? There's orange peel porn somewhere out there. I don't know where it is because I'm not into that. But there's someone who really gets off
on
the peeling of one orange. Peeling of an orange in one go.
What do you want exactly?
I'm going to look it up.
Okay.
Orange peel porn.
I found a Mercedes with wood paneling.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yes. Not a station wagon, though, Bill.
What kind of car is it?
It's more like an SUV type thing.
Like a G-Wagon?
Yeah. We're about done with this conversation.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Stu Gatz, who had a better weekend of transactions, the Miami Heat or the Miami Dolphins? The Heat get Victor Oladipo for peanuts.
Right.
And then the Dolphins, I think it's consensus, right? Nobody is saying that the Dolphins didn't win that deal, right? The Dolphins, they traded down three spots and they added a first-round pick and a third-round pick.
I think what the Dolphins did was fairly amazing because you have no idea what's going on with Deshaun Watson. So they're still in play with that because they have so many picks, not just this year, but over the next 3 years. So if that clears up, that situation clears up, we have no idea if it will, they could still go after Deshaun Watson. They have enough assets. So to answer your question, I think the Dolphins had a much better weekend. The Dolphins are really set up here to have like a nice 10-year run if Tua works out. They really are set up.
Careful, guys. I care about you. This may be a very good deal for the Miami Dolphins, independent of what San Francisco does for you. But Kyle Shanahan's going to be taking a quarterback with that pick. And you're forever going to have to see the graphic of who Kyle Shanahan took with that pick and who the Dolphins take with their picks.
That's
okay.
True.
Right.
And I'm telling you, with 100% certainty, because I believe Kyle Shanahan is one of the greatest minds in football. Who he gets in this trade is going to be better than anybody else the Miami Dolphins get, and you're going to have to see that graphic. Trust me, I lived through the Julio Jones trade. And for a brief moment in time, I lived through the Carson Wentz trade, which looked really bad for Cleveland until Carson Wentz ended up being crap too. Then it's just both crap. But I'm telling you, this graphic is going to haunt you. Heed my warning.
It's Justin Fields, right? That's who everyone thinks that they're going with?
Because everyone assumes Wilson's going to go second, and I'm sure Sugatz got pretty excited watching that pro day.
I did get very excited. Now there are talks of Sam Darnold going to the Bears. I heard Mike Tannenbaum this morning, though, say that the Niners like Matt Jones from Alabama.
Whoa.
I know.
Oh, you're gonna, but he's going to be great. He's going to be great because Kyle Shanahan's great.
I thought they liked the guy from North Dakota.
Trey Lance?
Yeah.
Electric. He would fit Kyle Shanahan system quite well from the little that I've seen of him. Remember, they broke all sorts of protocol in North Dakota. He's from North Dakota, right?
Yeah.
North Dakota played just one game, and it was a showcase game specifically for Lance.
Yep. He's technically the first one and done college football player because he redshirted, he played 1 year, and then this year he played basically one game. So he's basically a redshirt sophomore, which makes him a one and done. I watched like 15 minutes of highlights of him the other night because I was doing my radio show on Sirius XM Mad Dog Radio, which I do 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern every Friday night with Zach Harper. You like that, right?
Smooth promotion.
What else do you do? What else do you do with the Zach Harper? Is there anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do this podcast called Cinephobe, which is where we watch movies that are poorly rated by Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain whether they are accurately poorly rated or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, wherever you get podcasts. We've had such illustrious guests on this Zoom call. We had Stugatz do Tango and Cash. We had Roy do Money Train. We had Juju Gotti for Eraser. We might have Mike Ryan for a future unspecified Cinephobe.
Oh, no, I've already unleashed the dragon lack of
Mortal Kombat. Yeah. Annihilation.
Yeah, there's going to be a Mystery Crate Cinephobe collaboration. Mystery Crate is going to be Mortal Kombat 1 review because it doesn't fit the criteria of Cinephobe because it's too awesome. And Mortal Kombat Annihilation will be on Cinephobe proper, and it certainly meets the criteria because it's terrible.
It is awful, and it is awesome at the same time. Well, Cinephobe, wherever you get podcasts. Obviously, last week's episode did rave reviews. Everyone loved the Batman and Robin two-part episode because we went through all the Mr. Freeze puns, and we also went through Uma Thurman, underrated. Had a lot of plant puns in that one, talking about mulch in her yard and things of that nature, which is a little risque for a kids' movie.
I'm curious to see if anyone remembers where you were going before we got sidetracked.
I know exactly where we're going.
I know where we were going. Hold on. Let's see if anyone else knows, though. Mike, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know.
Well, because I had to scan my brain because we were just so deep in a promo mode. I was like, where was he getting at?
All right, Whittingham, do you have any idea?
I do. I remember.
Okay, well, of course you do. Cody, do you have any idea?
I definitely know. I just don't want to spoil it for the audience.
All right,
okay,
Billy.
Okay, terrible game by me.
Billy, any idea? We all know. I think everyone's lying, though. I want to expose them.
Wait, but look at Chris Cody's laugh. I'm not sure.
We're still doing station wagons?
Finally, a good teammate.
Roy, do you have any idea?
The quarterback from North Dakota?
Yeah, Trey Lance.
Really? That's not where I thought we were.
What, really?
I thought we were breaking down the Niners.
Oh, we weren't?
It may go hand in hand.
Because I like the move that the Niners made. What he is telling you, Kyle Shanahan, is I'll never have this opportunity again to get a quarterback because I'm such a damn good coach. My teams are always going to be good. So I'm going to move up now, take that guy. And if you're a Dolphin fan, you're going to have to watch that guy have a Hall of Fame career.
Hang on a second, though, with Kyle Shanahan. Three of his four seasons have been 6-10 or worse, right? And there's a whole lot of C.J. Beathards running around out there for San Francisco. I know Garoppolo has been hurt for a huge part of it, but, like, for the most part, his regular season records have been bad. But like, you, I would not be surprised if this went poorly.
But, Chris, you just gave the game away. There's a whole lot of C.J. Beathard, who is their third-string quarterback, running around out there. When I mean,
beat hard.
He's a quarterback whisperer. He made it to a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo, who advanced metric Twitter would suggest is actually not that great. But there is a steep drop-off between Jimmy G and Nick Mullins.
I would also say that, like, San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan's skill would appear to be manufacturing running backs. Like, that's his greatest skill. But the quarterback thing is kind of like, because if you had said, right, he trades for Jimmy Garoppolo, second-round pick, he's going to make Jimmy Garoppolo into a great player. And now it seems like Jimmy Garoppolo is available, and Kyle Shanahan's ready to replace him. So I don't know if, like, the Jimmy Garoppolo thing was a smashing success, even though they made it to a freaking Super Bowl and were a Jimmy Garoppolo throw away from winning it.
I think it was a smashing success then, but you're right.
But wait, do you even give him the credit for that? Because Belichick did him a favor, is how everybody I thought remembered that trade.
The Duke!
Dookie ball.
He dropped the dookie. I continue. I'm sorry, the Duke.
That's it. I was just asking a question.
But they do manufacture.
This is in my area of expertise.
They do manufacture running backs because of that zone running scheme. It dates back to Kyle Shanahan's father. They always get the most out of it. Heck, you saw it in Washington when Kyle Shanahan was calling plays there with Alfred Morris, who was not a highly touted running back prospect out of FAU.
But to me, the reason why I don't think the Dolphins will regret it is because they were never taking a quarterback with that third pick, right? They were never going to take the guy that Kyle Shanahan is going to take now. They were going to take what I believe to be the same receiver that they'll take at 6 at 3, if not for this trade.
No, I think, listen, it's a great trade. You're right. If they were going to get a new quarterback, it was going to be trading for Deshaun Watson. That's and they could still do that down the road if they want to do it. They have 2 picks this year, 1 first-round pick next year. 2-3 years from now. So they have 5 first-round picks over the next 3 years. But I do think that's a perfect spot to take, like, Pitts or Jamar Chase or Devonta Smith, one of the guys they want. So the Dolphins made a very, very good move over the weekend.
I love the trade if I'm a Dolphin fan because the Dolphins very clearly now, I think we can assume, believe in Tua. So if you believe in Tua...
Well, they're forced to believe in Tua at this point.
Now you have the draft capital to help Tua out. But I kind of think that you're getting this these draft picks to help Tua out. And the jury's still out on Tua. You're getting these weapons to see if you have a good quarterback in Tua, which is totally fine. But I think you're going to have to deal with whatever this quarterback does in this system because it's a very quarterback-friendly system. From Brian Hoyer on down, we've seen players play well above their talent level in that system.
I think you make a completely fair point in that it's been a stick to beat bad organizations with. I just wonder if, like, has the narrative flipped and now the Dolphins kind of seem like a good organization? I was surprised when these trades happen that they're like Chris Greer memes now, that, like, people are really excited about what the Dolphins are doing from an executive standpoint, that, like, he was being praised on the level of Pat Riley, not on the level, but on a similar territory. And the idea that the Dolphins are kind of constantly flipping first-round picks into more first-round picks and multiplying their draft capital to the degree that the Dolphins seem well-run now.
It is going to be painful, though, to Mike's point, if whoever they take turns out to be a stud. Like, that is going to hurt, and I hadn't really considered that. I was just taking a victory lap with Chris Greer this weekend, but, you know, I'm happy with the trade, but also still, like, we have Matt Ryan that we've been looking at. Obviously, that's old now, but then we had the guy from last year, Justin Herbert, and now, yeah, it's just going to be painful for
Chris. I think you and I are like-minded because I'm just Chris Cody. I'm just viewing this through the prism of I've been supporting a bad team for, and it's kind of nuts that the Dolphins.
But look where you're at now.
Look where
your Browns are at now, Mike.
Right, but we botched those big trades. The Sashi Brown. I saw the Sashi Brown memes when he was just hogging draft picks. Eventually, got it right with the number one pick of Myles Garrett and the number one overall pick of Baker Mayfield. We didn't get those picks via trade. We got those because we were terrible.
I mean, Chris, you have to like what they did because they're going to be good now and they're set up for the future. So you have to, as a Dolphin fan, whether you believe in Tua or not, it doesn't matter. There's no way you could believe in Tua at this point. You haven't seen enough. But you have to like what they did. The only, I guess, criticism you could throw at the Dolphins is if they really liked one of these guys, Pitts or one of these receivers, they would have stayed right there at 3 and taken him for Tua. And now you don't have a guarantee that the guy you actually want is going to be there at 6.
And yet, that guy might still be there because there's talk about 4 quarterbacks going in the top 4, and there's a left tackle coming out of Oregon that is like a generational left tackle. So you might even still get your first pick of the skill guys at 6.
It is no doubt a good trade for the Miami Dolphins if they have their heart set on Tua as their quarterback. I'm just doing the fan thing, which is very afraid of these Photoshops going forward.
It does feel like they're being run like the Patriots, though. It does, like, they have a plan. They're well run. They have a good head coach. They have a young quarterback. They have, like, it feels like the Patriots down here.
Where did that take the Patriots?
Yeah, this does not feel anything like the Patriots down here.
Just in terms of accumulating draft picks and the way they're kind of going about their business, it does feel like that. I mean, this is what Belichick does.
It feels for the first time in a long time the Miami Dolphins have a plan. And it's got buy-in from the fans because everyone would agree this seems to be a good plan. And that is a step in the positive direction. Also a step in the positive direction to make it feel more like the New England Patriots is actually making the playoffs. So let's start there.
Okay, that's fair. I didn't say they were going to win six Super Bowls.
They were essentially
a
playoff team last year.
Right.
They had the same record as a bunch of teams that made the playoffs. They just missed out. They didn't earn that third round or that third pick in the draft. They were a good team last year.
I would say if I were to ditch my fandom, my Jet fandom, and choose a new team to start rooting for right now because I think their next 10 years are going to be great, the Dolphins the Chiefs and the Dolphins would be right up there. Thank you for stopping me before I got the full fins out. Okay? I forgot about Patty Mahomes. How about that?
Dolphins are a great team to buy stock in right now if you're looking at it that way. They're pretty set up well for the future. The pictures have to pan out. The quarterback has to pan out.
Yeah.
I think this still has mm-hmm. – you still judge this draft and these draft picks based on the one that you took last year. If the quarterback doesn't work out, then you're going to see these picks not work out.
You guys are playing this all wrong. A team for the next 10 years? Bucks? They got their quarterback for the decade.
You're right.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.